Right, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
Man, it's going good. Been a little busy, but things have been fun and exciting. I've been playing some Black Ops 6 in the downtime. I'm right about to hit Prestige for the first time. I think I'm gonna knock that out, and then I'm gonna finally dive into the campaign, like proper. See if I
Okay.
can maybe beat.
Have you been sucking down any of the Mountain Dew game fuel and getting your double XP and getting your rewards, being all sweaty?
I did a little bit of that, because I always love dabbling in like random rewards cards for things, and I got like a free badass like mount and wow, like a hell cycle or something,
Okay,
and I
cool.
only had to get like two Mountain Dew or three or something, so yeah. So yeah.
I had Neil over the other night over the day before Thanksgiving. We spent some time in the Rat Cave, and because we spent time in the Rat Cave, that means we have Doritos and Mountain Dew in the house. So I'm working through the Mountain Dew right now. Normally, we don't keep sugared pop in the house because I'm powerless to resist. So it's a little bit of a treat right now. So
I
yeah,
get it.
awesome. I'm glad you're enjoying Black Ops. Laura, how's it going this week?
Oh, pretty good. I'm now working up from, I said I was organizing my kitchen last week, and now I'm cooking up a storm. Yeah, love the organization.
Good. And you're just cooking some pickled, well, I suppose one doesn't cook pickled cabbage, they pickle it. But what else are
Yeah,
you
I'm
making?
just like, oh, I'm a real like chef person now who makes accoutrement.
That was pretty good on the pronunciation there. But you have a lot of exposure to French, I would imagine.
No, I don't. People in British
No,
Columbia
you're
do not speak
right. You're
French.
on the other side. Okay, you're on the other side of the country. That's right. All right. Well, before I make any more linguistic faux pas, Neil, how's it going this week?
It's going.
It's gone.
Yeah, that's what I'll say
That's
right
about
now.
the extent of it. Okay, well, we'll get your thoughts on the movie. Hopefully, we'll get you more in the spirit of things. And last but certainly not least, he is not the man I think I am at home. Oh, no. He's a racket man. Okay, we got Jesse Mueller on the podcast, everybody. Special guest for this week. Everybody, welcome Jesse to the podcast.
Welcome, Jesse.
Yeah, good to have you, Jesse. Sam, do you think you should give the audience some context as to why Jesse is a Rocket Man? Or maybe Jesse should
No,
give the context?
I don't think I should give context to that at all, Neil.
Okay. Yeah.
I
Okay.
think we're just gonna leave that.
That's fine. Yeah,
No.
no.
It makes sense as David Lynch's number one fanboy.
Yeah. Listen, I don't think a fanboy would have given Dune and Wild at Heart such middling reviews. But anyway, sorry, Jesse, how's it going this week?
Oh, it's going good. Yeah, the I've been like under the weather the last couple days, and yesterday I took a half day off of work, and I used the other half of my day to watch Mandy. And
Yeah.
I posted some pictures in the chat of what the world looked like where I'm from on that day yesterday, and it was pretty appropriate. I live in the Pacific Northwest, so and it was a very foggy, mystical day yesterday. So it was
Yeah.
perfect day
Beautiful.
for watching Mandy.
Beautiful.
Perfect.
I had no
That's
idea.
awesome.
I didn't watch anything about the movie, didn't read anything about the movie. The only thing I knew about Mandy is that it was a Nicolas Cage movie and that it was trippy because I'd seen like a couple zero information trailers. Just with like all the colors and with Nick Cage's crazy face. So that's kind of all I knew going in.
Is that the trailer where he says crazy evil like
Nice.
that?
I don't remember. It's been such a long time. The only impression I had was, okay, this looks like some like synth wave Nick Cage
It's
craziness.
like this looks like some shit somebody on Reddit would eat up.
Yeah.
Dude, I totally feel it. Like when I'm looking at these photos of where you're living, I'm like jealous that I can't watch Twin Peaks while living there.
Yeah, it's a feeling. I will say it definitely wears on you. Like when I come home to the great land of cows and bounty and black soil, the thing I'm most grateful for is the sky in the sun. Like, yeah. All these trees are pretty. I like trees. But there's a lot of mm-hmm. them. And you can't mm-hmm. see the sky. And some, you know, it's funny, like, I had a professor in college who was from the East Coast, and he lived in a place kind of like this. And when I mentioned that to him, he was like, well, out here in Iowa, I feel like I'm on the moon. I feel so exposed. I was like, okay,
yeah.
Interesting. So we're all just yearning for our third grade home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You know, man, we're all just hamsters in God's microwave, Jesse. Well, you kind of already answered it, but the first question I always ask people when they bring a movie to the, when a guest brings a movie to the podcast, what made you want to bring the movie to the podcast? So you just saw a trailer of it and you saw, hey, it's Synthwave, Nick Cage, let's rock.
Yeah. And I like Nick Cage. My dad liked him too. So we watched a lot of it. A lot of time I spent with my dad when I was a kid. He'd grab a movie from Family Video and we'd go home and watch it. And the cool thing about my dad was he didn't care about the rating. So we watched cool movies cool. when I was a kid. Some of the Nick Cage movies that I like solidified my appreciation of Nick Cage. I'm terrible with actors. I'm terrible with directors. But the movie where he plays a like con artist and he has like a daughter. That's a cool Nick Cage movie.
Is it Kick-Ass?
It's older. It would be earliest, like early 2000s.
Like Gone in 60 Seconds?
I don't think so. Anyway, maybe it's kind of obscure. But Nick Cage, he's great. And I knew Mandy was just like on the shelf in my mind. And
you're thinking of Matchstick Men, says
Google. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So, cool. Yeah, I love Nick Cage. Obviously, he's got this crazy spectrum of like, I don't know, of hits and misses, I guess. Yeah. It's like he can really knock it out of the park, but sometimes, like in Wicker Man, you just like, it's just like, this is a hot garbage, like, waste of time.
Right. The way, what I also love Nick Cage, obviously. One of the things I always express about my love for him is that no matter what piece of shit he's in, he commits 110% to the role. Like, he is an actor and he loves his profession deeply. And there's never a wink to the camera like, isn't it funny that I'm in this shitty movie? No, he is committed 1,000%. And I love that about him.
He's the poor man's Kenneth Branagh.
I've never seen somebody don a bear costume and then punch the shit out of a cult member like Nick Cage does in the Wicker Man remake.
You know, I don't know if this is like jumping the gun or anything, but along those lines of like committing 100%, there's like the typical Nick Cage scene in Mandy, you know, where he's screaming in his underwear. And at first I'm like, okay, this is it. We're doing it. But then there was like, it went on and there was a point where it turned and I was just like, oh, wow. I'm so sad right now. Like, holy shit. I feel really bad. Like, it was different. It hit way different than all of the other Nick Cage freakout scenes that I've seen.
You know, and I'm trying to imagine somebody else doing, like another actor doing that scene. And I can't imagine another actor having that vodka, tidy whitey mental breakdown like Nick Cage and having it be like pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And kind of like the moral center of the movie. Anyway, so let's back up. How many of you guys have actually seen? I've seen Mandy like two or three times before this. Gideon, you've seen it a bunch. Neil, have you? Did you see this?
Yeah, I watched it a few years ago.
I think this is my fourth watch.
I have not seen it before.
Okay.
Did any of you? We probably all watched it streaming. Does anybody
actually
own a physical?
To add a little bit, I had never heard of it before. So when I was searching for Mandy, I first came across this like heartwarming horse show or something. And then a couple other movies, I was like, no, that's not it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked because I have some show and tell.
Oh, let's see it, dude.
Very metal movie. I have the Steel
Book. Oh, hell yeah.
for Mandy, and on the back it says Mandy in the metal.
Very
font.
Cool.
Yeah, really cool. I got it for like $14 from Best Buy before they stopped selling movies. So nice. Love it.
Dude, I wish I would have watched it because on this movie on streaming looks like shit because there's so much film grain and there's so many like artificial filters put over the movie that's like the streaming degrades the quality to such a degree. It's just like, oh my God, I wish I had Gideon's.
The movies that's like literally gritty.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't Extremely know if they shot it on film, but they put some artificial 80s filters all over this shit and I eat it up. Okay, so we've all basically seen it before. We've all seen it before except for Laura and Jesse. And so let's give a basic synopsis. This is an incredibly easy movie to summarize. Nick Cage and his wife, the titular wife Mandy, are living out in the Is it explicitly said that it's the Pacific Northwest?
That's where it's like set, but it was filmed in Belgium, I believe.
Right. Yeah. I saw that during the credits that they got like it has like tax exempt status or something in Belgium. Anyway,
I think at one point they say that like last week I was down in Portland. So
Okay. So let's say Oregon. They're living out in the woods. They've got this sick collection of heavy metal t-shirts and they're just living their lives. And he's a lumberjack. She's like working at a store. Colt drives through town. Colt leader sees Mandy, thinks she's hot, abducts her, is like, yo, come into the cult. She's like, no. And then just laughs at his gross naked body. Which I love that scene.
Dude hangs dogs.
So they fucking kill Mandy and burn her up in front of Nick Cage, and then Nick Cage just goes total psycho. Goes and gets his old crossbow out, which I love that we never like really know like what he was doing back in the day with his crossbow. Builds an axe and then just goes and hunts down some psycho killers. And you know, events transpire. It's a pretty simple revenge movie. It's not a spoiler, I don't think, to say Mandy dies. I mean, it's kind of like the whole thing. So let's just give our high level thoughts. We'll go around the table. I really like Mandy. I think it is an exercise in visuals over plot. Obviously, like that's like the least revelatory statement possible. But it does its trick pretty, and it executes it pretty well, right? There's just like a lot of metal shit that happens in this movie. Performances are good. It's just a crazy visual thing to see. It's just a very novel kind of looking, feeling movie. I feel like when this came out, the 80s nostalgia hadn't been totally played out yet. I think Stranger Things was like a year old when this movie came out. So yeah, we weren't like all totally sick of that yet. You know, it's not like my favorite movie ever, but I think like Mandy is like pretty good. It's like a good watch with the bros or whatever. Like this would have been a really good film in 40s night on at the Searly House. Yeah. Other than that, there's, you know, it's kind of like 1917 and that there's like not a lot of plot to discuss, but I really enjoy it. And I do agree with Jesse that I think the, I don't want to say the trailers are misleading, but I think you're expecting a more action heavy movie than you get. And it's more of a slow burn kind of acid trip Blade Runner-y kind of movie where it's more about the mood and just existing in this like mood bath for 2 hours. But I'll go around this way. So Laura, how'd you feel? High level thoughts.
Two notes. Number one, at times this movie felt like less of a horror movie and more like being filmed like going through one of those haunted horror house walkthroughs. Like something about it felt almost like Wild at Heart, almost play-like in a way that like you're watching theater rather than film. And I guess it's just those long takes because this is a movie that is just like made entirely of long takes. And there's only about like, you know, 20 shots in the entire movie and they're all like 1 minute long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing. It definitely lets you linger on things. It lets you think. It lets your eyes wander as opposed to like a Transformers movie where you're just like on visual cocaine the entire time. Now this movie was on real cocaine and there's a difference. Yeah, and just I like the artistic choices. It's definitely a torture porn movie. Like, I mean, It's again, if you are a person who's like, yeah, or is sensitive to like violence or that sort of thing, that will not be for you. It's a horror movie. And then just I have another thoughts later on, just because one of my hobbies is I'm a big fan of like the Fundy Fridays channel and just the examination of fundamentalist Christian culture. And I thought it was, you know, not inaccurate the way they portray them as both like self-aggrandizing and also like a little bit pathetic. And just like there was a, I don't know, there was just some interesting choices made there for these characters and the way they've set up their little cult.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely like some, I don't want to say heavy handed. I feel like that's giving it a negative connotation, but there's some pretty like overtly heavy, commentary like that. Like the first thing you even hear in the movie is like Reagan on the radio talking about the great, silent majority, talking about all that. So, Neil, how about you? High level thoughts? How'd it go?
Yeah. I first off, I think this movie is like just visually gorgeous. I don't have like the same eye for like streaming quality versus physical media quality that you do, yeah. Sam. So I just think it's amazing. What year did Stranger Things come out?
I think 2017 was the first year.
Actually, it says 2016 for Stranger Things. So I think these movies came out the same year then.
This came out 2018.
Okay, so on some level then, I think that this kind of stole some of like the Stranger Things like vibes. Like, and I know the Stranger Things is like stealing from the 80s. But like they definitely share some they share some vibes, and I think some people might think of Stranger Things in a negative context now, but I don't hate it. So
I don't hate it either.
Yeah, I enjoy whatever those two things are selling, I'm buying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One other thing is that like it's kind of hard to judge as a movie in some ways. I know that there's more to like acting and performances than just like having lines. But like Nicolas Cage does not say a lot in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think most of the dialogue comes from the antagonists, rather than
Mr. lead singer of a prog rock band from the 1970s.
Yeah. Jeremiah Sand.
Mm-hmm.
So like in some ways it's kind of carried by Linus Roach, who plays Jeremiah Sand, and Ned Dennehy. So Nick Cage does a lot of great physical acting, but he's not as vocal as he is in a lot of his other movies.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's a interesting departure for him on some level, and like
you wonder if they picked him for the role for that reason, because he's such a great physical actor, or you wonder if they maybe made the role like wrote it with him in mind. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean same kind of thing. Andrea Riseborough, who plays Mandy, she's got what like 50 words. I'm underselling it maybe a little bit, but she's not delivering a lot of lines.
Except for that bird monologue, which kind of tore me up a little bit.
Yeah.
There's the bird, and I remember her asking we'll go around. Everybody can talk about what their favorite planet is in a second, because that's an interesting question. That'd be a good first day question. Jesse, we haven't gotten to Jesse yet. So high-level thoughts, Jesse.
So high-level thoughts. I agree with a lot that's been said so far. I like the way you put it as a mood bath. It felt like a bath. I felt like I was taking a bath for sure. I was just, yes, take me away. Take me into this crazy 80s fantasy space slaughterhouse, like whatever we're on, yeah. I want to be in it. Like, I guess I wouldn't have. I didn't think about the dialogue point on my own, but now that you mention it, Neil, you're totally right. It's quite thin in that respect. But that being said, there's still a lot of dots to connect, I think, like with what they did show us and tell us, which I was like, I thought it was. I thought there was a lot going on, even though it was, like you said at the beginning, Sam, like a very simple plot. Like, this happens and this happens and this happens. And I think I told my wife I was watching this movie, and she like went and read the synopsis. She didn't tell me anything, but she's like, "This sounds like this sounds so dumb." And I'm like, mm-hmm. "Come on, okay." Well, that was never going to happen anyway. She doesn't like any kind of any amount of blood. It would have been a chance for her to slink away. So,
yeah.
But anyway, it was just a gorgeous mood bath. And in spite of the low dialogue, I felt like there was still a lot going on, a lot more than just blood and gore. And and I think it's like, you know, these little pieces of like what they say to each other, these little nuggets that they like pick up and put down, like Mandy's dream, I guess, when she saw like the dead baby deer, and she went down to like investigate it, and she cried a little bit. And that scene where he's like looking at her at the fire, and he just like looks at her face, and then it's like just her face, and this is like all up in the screen like this, like you know. I don't understand it, but I can just feel that something powerful is being communicated. And, you know, I appreciate that. So I guess that's what I have to say about the I don't know, the how much, what, like what content is going on in here kind of question.
Read me these notes, Jesse. I want to hear what's on the notepad.
I just pulled up like a bullet. Like I watched this on YouTube. I made sure to put it on the highest resolution though, before I press the play button.
Thank you. I
just wrote down like a bulleted list of funky things that came up. The horn of a praxis. This is the tainted blade of the pale knight, straight from the abyssal lair. poor stupid pigs born without souls. The darker the whore, the brighter the flame.
I gotta talk about that later.
Cheddar goblin puking commercial right after Mandy is set on fire. Cartoon dream. Hidden drink. The Reaper bit. I come for the Reaper. Mandy said that a Reaper is coming when she was talking to the cult leader, which is kind of interesting. And actually, I had a little break in my watching because my wife came home with Calvin and I did family stuff. And then I finished watching at the end of the night. So I had some time to think about some of that stuff.
When did the break come in the movie?
Right before his final... It was pretty late. Like, he had already killed a couple of the cultists.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Before the chainsaw duel or after?
After the chainsaw duel.
Okay.
So yeah, I had a little break to like kind of think about things a little bit. I forgot what I was even gonna say. I'll just keep reading. You're a vicious snowflake. third bad guy doing coke and watching porn. These are just things that I was like, what the fuck? You ripped my shirt.
Yeah.
Shirt.
A jar of goo. Guy gargling blood. You exude the cosmic darkness. Anyway, okay. So these are just some stupid things. That was like, oh, interesting.
Did you guys know that the Cheddar Goblin commercial was made by the same guy who did Too Many Cooks?
Damn
I
it,
was gonna
Sam.
talk to you about that. I was gonna talk to you about that because I feel like we have that connection because I remember you showing me Too Many
Yeah,
Cooks.
I did. Yeah, I remember you were high as fuck, dude, and I showed you that, and it like blew your mind.
I was like,
Oh yeah,
what in the hell?
I remember what I was gonna say. So during the period where I didn't know what the end was gonna be, and I like the end was coming soon. It was like a half hour left of the movie. I'm like, okay, so what's gonna happen? Like, I know that we're like, after mulling it over a little bit, I'm like, okay, so I caught the Reaper thing, so I was like, okay. She said that to the cult leader, and then when Nick Cage started his revenge, like he picked up his Reaper from the from his buddy or whatever. So she knows he's coming, or she knew he was coming, so that means that she had some like magical powers. She actually is special or like powerful or something. And so either they like the cultists like messed up and they like burned this like primordial demon lady and she's gonna like come back and like reappear at the end or something and like take over, or something like that. I don't know. I was trying to figure out how she like had this premonition that he was doing this stuff, and it still isn't really clear, I guess. But and that was obviously wrong, but it did
well,
end
to
up.
Your,
yeah,
Go to ahead. Your previous point, I think it's a movie not to be solved. Right, like it's a problem, right? It's just
yeah.
It's a movie to just be like, it means what it means, man. I'm just gonna sit here and sit in this mood bath and have feelings, you know.
Yeah.
It at some point it doesn't you know, you're gonna like hurt yourself trying to figure out like, oh man, what did that mean when it cut to the cartoon bits, the cartoon intercuts in the middle of this movie that are totally sick. Does everybody have a favorite kill in this movie?
I liked when he killed the like the first henchman,
like the guy on the with the crossbow that comes off the bike and he hits.
Sorry,
him.
the cultist henchman, the like first mate
with like stabbing him in the mouth
out of the van where he like skewers his head with the back.
There's not even a fight. He just gets up in his face and he backs him into a tree and just sticks it in his mouth slowly and he's just like. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I was just like,
that's a really good one. Neil, go for it.
I just want to interject and say, like, structurally, like the sequence of the kills is like in a video game where you do like every side quest and then go to do the main quest, and it's like super easy because he takes that like. The demonic bikers you think like are going to be like the end game, but he kills all of them first, and then apart from one amazing surprise, like the cultists are just bang bang bang.
Is the amazing surprise that one of them has like a 4-meter long chainsaw?
Yes. Like that guy has like no lines in the whole movie, but he is the final boss.
Yeah.
That was a really cool
like,
fight.
He's like the big brute from Indiana Jones in that he is not the actual villain, but he's going to be the guy that gives Nick Cage the most trouble because obviously Jeremiah Sands has like 1 HP and just like 10 charisma, you know?
Yeah.
If we're breaking it down in D&D terms here. Dude, I like the cartoon interstitials in this movie. Like whenever it cuts to like one of those big fancy title treatments and it's like the woods or when it says Mandy or when it says, you know, fuck whatever.
Definitely riffing on that Stranger Things energy.
Shit. Mm. Like all those visuals were so cool. And then it would cut to those the cartoon bits of like Mandy and she's naked and there's like the flowing hair, there's the planets and shit. Like I would like snap somebody's wrist for an entire movie sequel of just those cartoon interstitials. I think that animation style is so cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to our favorite kills. Get in.
Man, probably the weird knife penis guy. And like slitting his throat, and then just all the blood getting all over him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, time to do some cocaine and check out this gooner jar over here, you know, that's filled with like demonic acid or whatever to help me on my revenge vision quest.
I have a different definition in my mind of gooner jar, Gideon, but I'm glad you cleared it up that it was LSD in that jar. What'd you say, Neil?
I was about to say, like, Gideon, I think yours and my definitions of gooner jar are very different.
Okay. Laura, did you have a favorite kill?
You know what? I'm gonna just like complete the whole set and just say I thought the old lady killing was interesting, just because like she represents the kind of like dedicated, fully drank the Kool-Aid kind of cult follower, and she's so sycophantic to this leader guy, and then she immediately switches tracks. She's like, no, I'll suck your dick. And it's like, well, no, lady, you kind of, that ship has sailed. And like, she comes across as like evil in her obedience to like her, this cause that they're just all living in their little cult and getting high as balls and murdering people.
Yeah. It was, I didn't think about it until right now, but both of the two final bosses are like, I'll suck your dick, please don't kill me. I didn't think
like,
about that
yeah,
until
they,
right
they
now.
Yeah, they capitulate, like, because they're just cowardly little idiots who, like, don't actually have a cult. Like, they're not... It's how much do you drink your own Kool-Aid? Do you believe that you're actually the son of God and you have magical powers? And I think that's also reflected in the movie itself. Like, there are times when when the biker guys are first introduced, I'm like, whoa, is this like actually a demonic thing? Like, is this a fantasy movie or is this just like realism? And the whole issue with drugs kind of like blurs that line a little bit, because, you know, when you're high as balls on LSD, it may as well be a horrific monster.
Right.
There are horrific monsters all around us.
And they're just, you know, freaky cult people in the 80s.
Jesse, was the horrific monster man all along?
No.
We're gonna have to label this podcast episode as hashtag deep. All right, what else do we want to talk about regarding Mandy? It's I'm kind of having the 1917 problem where like the plot is pretty thin, so it's like
I want to talk a little bit about some of the characters.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so like the cult leader, he's got the most dialogue, as has been mentioned a couple times. I actually think, you know, for all of the... When people think about toxic masculinity, they want to like show you a picture of Andrew Tate. And it's kind of a mixed message, because Andrew Tate gets a couple of things right. I'm not a Tate guy. I don't even follow him. I barely even know anything about him. But
you're not a tater tot.
I'm not a tater tot. He's jacked, and he has, you know, he can provide. So he is jacked, and he can provide. Is he a narcissist? Does he probably believe he has magical powers? Does he think he's the son of God? All of those things. So he's like a piece of garbage, and I think that the amount of Andrew Tate that is toxic in a toxic masculinity sense is precisely the intersection of Andrew Tate and the bad guy from Mandy. Like, the bad guy from Mandy completely, I mean, he's just like a complete neat package of the things that are wrong and the, like, the bad paths you can take. And I feel like a little guilty. I mean, if you don't look at, if you're being honest with yourself and you listen to this person and you don't think that some of that is like reflected in you, or you've made those mistakes at some point, you know, I don't, well, that, you know, you must be a pretty decent person. But I think that most gentlemen our age would at least see something in common, or at least feel kind of ashamed about looking at that character and thinking about themselves and their own actions. At least I do to some degree. Like, you know, who hasn't let their ego run out of check? Who hasn't thought for a second, like, I'm not getting what I deserve. I deserve this, you know, like the entitlement. So yeah, I mean, I think he's a great bad guy. Yeah, and as far as the like the Jesus stuff, I don't actually think that they're like Jesus. I mean, this is such a minor thing. I don't actually think that they're Jesus people, because there's that one point where the bad guy's talking to Nick Cage, like right before he stabs him. Also, that shit's like he stabs him just like the Roman, you know, the Roman guy stabs Jesus, right? And he does it in the same way, and he says, mm-hmm. "Jesus fucked up. I'm smarter than Jesus." Like basically, you know. So I don't think that they are themselves crazy church people, even though they might present all of the same symptoms.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. Regardless oh, go, of what go ahead, Neil.
I was going to say, just like, regardless of whatever denomination you may or may not subscribe to, there's definitely like at least one level of heresy. Maybe more depending on your denomination, but there's at least one level of heresy involved. So yeah, I agree. Like they're described as Jesus freaks, but they're not mm-hmm. truly Jesus freaks.
They've got some of the symbology, right? I mean, they've got the symbolism. They've got the cross, and they've got. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Nick Cage picks up a Bible at some point, but there's some seemingly holy vaunted document on a pedestal somewhere.
Mm-hmm. The crucifix. He called it something else though. In the movie,
yeah, what was
yeah,
that?
He called it the cruciform, and he said, "That's what the that's what the cruciform is about the lack of a sacrifice."
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, so this is kind of a minor thing. I think they're cultists, and they twisted they like this twisted take on Jesus. Mm-hmm.
Could just be a big symbol for using religion as an excuse to be hateful and do whatever the fuck you want, which is what a lot of people do.
Yeah.
I think there's that element, Laura. I choose to interpret this movie as being, if not like, it's like Lovecraftian. I think like I think there's an argument to be made with like Mandy's fascination with like. Celestial bodies. Mm-hmm. I think like there's the reference to like
Galactic. She's got a celestial body, am I right?
Oh. But like there's like strange creatures in the animated sequences, the LSD like seems to give people some sort of like warped perception or like what we would consider warped perception of the world, which I want to come back to because I think it's my favorite scene in the movie. But if it's not like directly like taking from Lovecraft, it's I think there's like Lovecraftian elements that are definitely running through there.
Mm-hmm. And can I just slip something in there a little bit that I thought was kind of interesting mm-hmm. and funny in that how we were earlier talking about how. The main villain has the most lines in the movie. And I thought it was just kind of amusing that when they first dose Mandy, his voice starts out super warped and just like, you, the audience are high on drugs like this. And then as he goes on talking, his voice reverts to normal. I'm like, wow, he's been talking for so long. Her fucking buzz is wearing off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like, I think they even like set him up like very effectively. Like he's definitely sinister,
mm-hmm.
But like really in like his first like real introduction after he has that scene where he berates the older woman in his cult and then has mm-hmm.
Brother Swan
who I played by Ned Denhy, who's been in a lot of things but rarely as like a lead. I think he might actually have like the strongest performance or within the movie.
He's incredible.
Like physically, I think he was like spot on the money for the role. Just like if you're just like flipping through faces, I just think he works so well. His eyes are just like so expressive and he looks like he's been through some shit. Like he seems like the kind of guy who would jump on the bandwagon of being the right hand man in a cult.
Mm-hmm.
But in that scene where everybody's tripping out, and Jeremiah Sand plays his album, which honestly I would I want to hear more.
yeah.
At least like on the instrumental side.
So before you keep going, Neil, this is what I was gonna respond to Jesse and say that, like, yeah, Jeremiah Sands is a very relatable villain in some way, because who hasn't played a shitty folk song for some hot goth chick and then had her laugh at your micro penis? So, sorry, go ahead.
That's good.
Just
that's
me?
Good.
Okay. Just
yeah, might just be you, son. But like he starts off, so the movie's set in 83, I think. And his first line is like, "Do you listen to the Carpenters?" Which, like, no shade against the Carpenters. They made some good stuff. But by 83, they were like, the Carpenters are gone. So like, this guy is like so out of touch.
Mm. Yeah, it's like now being like, "Hey, do you listen to NSYNC?"
Excuse me. But yeah, he's so caught up in his own persona that he's just kind of pathetic, because he's comparing himself to a band that is no longer culturally relevant.
Like, yeah, notable that Karen Carpenter died in 1983, the movie the year this is set to take place in. So there's something. Good old Panos Cosmatos thinks he's doing something smart with the writing there.
Probably, yeah. But like, I just think that he's done so well in like having like some kind of like narcissism and then some sort of personality disorder where he like swaps between you know, his like full-on charismatic cult leader to like, it's kind of shown in his death scene where like you would think that he's ending on like offering to suck Cage's cock to live, but instead he does that and then he goes back to cult leader mode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's like a very interesting way to present that character, those mm-hmm. tonal shifts.
Yeah, he was all over the place. Like, it made it more sinister in some way. I mean, just like the broad range of emotions that he goes through, definitely.
I've got some things I could mention about just kind of my thoughts on things with the movie.
Yeah. Go for it, man.
So yeah, this is my fourth watch. I hadn't seen it for about maybe a year and a half, 2 years. But I feel like I didn't remember quite a bit after watching again. And I want to talk about some of the metal elements of the movie and mm-hmm. some of the like comedy and things in it. Cause it just feels like such a love letter to metal music, very obviously with the soundtrack by Johan Johansson. Mm-hmm. that is excellent. I feel like that drives the movie so much. But it also feels like it has such an interesting emotional core of like it. They don't ever really explain much other than like her monologue about like the bird, but it's like these two people, like Red and Mandy, seem like they came from like maybe dark past or traumatic past experiences, stuff like that. And then found each other and were able to finally come together and have peace. And even like seeing her being represented with like the color blue, and he's literally called Red, and there's so much red and blood and everything like that. But also like the goofiness of it. It's like he just experienced probably the most traumatic event of his life, like seeing her burn alive in front of him. And then mm-hmm. yeah, walked in, he's like, "Oh, it's on the TV, the fucking Cheddar Goblin," like, and that like weird absurdity, like bringing him back to, "Oh, I'm just in my house now. I have to figure out what to do next." Mm-hmm. And I think like that goofiness, or like when he like snaps that knife dick guy's neck and then it like zooms in, he's like huge eyes, like just crazy.
That was my vote for my favorite kill, is him snapping the neck and like, he's just a weird Cage face. Man.
Like, so like that, because I feel like metal music and this movie just take themselves like so ridiculously seriously sometimes, with like some of the over the top lyrics or song names or band names or whatever, that to the point of just like ridiculousness where it gets goofy. Right. And I feel like this movie just like gets that so well. Right. And the last thing I'll say real quick, I feel like so much is said with just their facial expressions of like, I feel like this movie is so expertly cast of just like everybody that's in it. Like you cut to the older woman and she's watching Mandy burn and she's like almost like giggling because she was like jealous of her getting all the attention from Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. And that creepy dude's like holding the rope, like licking his teeth. And yeah, the brother Swan, Ned Dennehy. I mean, his whole face, you could just like feel like this weird pain and power that he's like from stuff he's gone through and just like how he interacts with everybody else in the cult. So it's just so emotive in just like the visuals, the music, and those nonverbal interactions that it just, it has such an interesting like sticking power. Because I remember when I first watched it, I wasn't as big on it, but it never like left my mind, and I just kept coming back to it.
Very memorable.
So that's all I wanted to say. Yeah.
One point I'll say on the music is I can't think of a movie where that has a better needle drop over the opening credits than there's no better pairing than the opening credits of Mandy and that King Crimson song Starless that plays at the beginning. So sick. And now that you're talking about it, like the seriousness combined with the goofiness that kind of like defines heavy metal, like this movie is almost like the subtext of the music in this movie is like that cult leader seems very progressive rockish, and it's like heavy metal is coming in to like destroy this weird progressive rock guy. Yeah, there's definitely something to that. I think they're definitely like talking kind of about the music of the era as well. Like with the Carpenter's comment, you feel like heavy metal is supposed to come in and kind of destroy the like the weirdly adult oriented serious you know rock music of that time. And there's definitely something to that.
And last thing, real quick, I'll say this movie feels very cathartic in a similar way that, at least for me personally, that like metal music can be. Like if you've been dealing with, you know, just difficulties, or maybe you're in like a toxic relationship with friends, family, the person you're dating, whatever. And having metal be like this solace, and it's not for everybody. This movie's not for everybody. Metal's not for everybody. But the people that it's for, it like speaks to so strongly. I feel like metalheads are just so into it. So
yeah, you know, it's funny. Like I think of it as a metal movie, kind of, but I also don't really think of it as a throw up the horns movie.
Right,
you know, it's like too slow for that. I'm not like it's not like Mad Max.
Meditative, yeah, it's so meditative and interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know, very different.
I'm going on. Yeah,
Jesse, what else do you want to bring up, man? Does Laurelin want to say hi?
Laurelin does not want to watch the movie, and she never will.
That's okay. If she wants to say hi on the podcast, she has to make two podcast appearances, then she gets on the poster.
Honey, if you make two podcast appearances, you get on a poster.
Mm-hmm. Jesse's getting on the poster.
Yep. She says, the old Dune and the movie where Nick Cage pours alcohol on his wounds and kills people. That's she's right about that.
One comment is like, I love that they keep a bottle of vodka in the bathroom.
Yeah.
So listen, actually, we've all been there, man. Something that was brought up earlier about the characters like having pain or whatever. This is like really kind of subtle, but like at the beginning of the movie, so they show you that he's a lumberjack. He like cuts down a tree, and then he gets in a chopper. I don't know if the writers know anything about chopping down trees. Maybe I don't know anything about chopping down trees, But is it worth it to have guys go chop down trees and then you pick them all up in a helicopter? Is that like economical?
There's like no way that that's economical. Why would you just get a truck or something? I don't know, but I can't imagine it. That's
okay.
How
so anyway,
works.
Yeah. How does that work? Anyway, in the helicopter,
it might be economical with 1980s gas prices.
Okay, maybe
this is Reagan's America, baby.
Maybe it's a high-profile client that just is like very eccentric. He's like these three trees.
So his friend offers him some alcohol, and he says no.
Yeah.
And so that's like the kind of the clue that like, and also the bottle, like it was hidden. Mm-hmm. It was in his hit like stowed away, which mm-hmm. people do that when they're trying to keep it out of the kitchen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually like extra sad. Because it's like, oh man, fuck. He's like he's falling into this. He's falling back into this like bad,
yeah,
thing. Mm-hmm.
Like his dark past, maybe with that, or maybe he was violent before. Maybe.
And so like, yeah. If they were happy together and like keeping each other afloat or whatever, mm-hmm. and then she's gone, then he's like back into this. They didn't make a huge deal out of that, but I do think that I don't think it was nothing.
God, it makes me think of who I would be if Grace wasn't here. Take the rat nest would be the whole house.
Yeah, and like obviously Mandy has like a big scar on her face, which adds to her mystique.
We
have that black character who gives this whole backstory to everything that's like, oh, finally some context. Yum, 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 yum. But we still don't understand all the crossbows. It's like, here's your old trusty crossbow. And we're like, what? It's like, all right, then I gotta go forge an axe. And you're like, this man was apparently in like Renaissance fairs or something.
Yeah. How does he know how to forge the axe and do all that business?
Yeah.
I mean, the movie just like, it just starts getting, maybe this, I didn't pick this up right away, but like the LSD that he does, mm-hmm. like changes the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And things just get progressively crazier in terms of the scene and like what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So it makes you wonder, I mean, like you said, this isn't something that needs to be solved, but like the scenes of the cultists at the beginning of the movie, they look like they're in some normal shack, like some guy's house. Mm-hmm. But then the end of the movie, they're in this like video game lair with like tiers and hidden doors and stuff.
Neil, the final battleground of this movie reminded me a lot of the villain's lair from the first season of True Detective. Did you get that?
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying, in part because I think True Detective is also heavily
Cthulhu inspired. Yeah, Lovecraftian. That's the word I was looking for.
That's a good word, and I think I agree with you, Neil, as far as the like other world or the like supernatural aspects. Like the horn of Apraxis, like this special device that like calls the servants. That was super, like, that is just like right out of the book. And then the tainted blade of the Pale Knight. Like, who's the Pale Knight? Why is the blade tainted? What is the Abyssal Lair? Like these illusions to a much deeper universe.
It just sounds like tracks on a metal album, and the metal album is called Mandy, That's
why I think what happened is the writer cracked open a monster manual and just flipped to a random page and said that's a cool looking word. Neil, didn't you say the horn of Apraxis was something?
Yeah, tell us IRL. What you were saying earlier about Gnosticism.
So, I mean, kind of in line with Lovecraftian themes. So I would say that the cult is arguably Gnostic in origin, which is an idea that rather than like being a sinner and seeking redemption in life, you're meant to cut through illusions and find the deeper truths of the universe, and that's fine, and that's how you find God. Which, you know, kind of spun on its head, I think ties in rather well with like creepy Lovecraftian themes, because that's what it's all about, is seeing like the cosmic horror behind the mundane. But yeah, and just because of like how things bleed over into one another, I'm sure you could find Abraxas listed in like a Dungeons and Dragons manual, but Abraxas is an entity that's tied to Christian Gnosticism. Without getting too religious or political in the podcast, I don't think that's what we're all here for. But I think there's, sorry.
You know, we could do, Neil, if you want to expound on that, you could always write a long bit about it, and I can addend it in the episode notes, and we can just attach it to the podcast.
You know, I could do that, or you could just type Gnosticism into Wikipedia, and that would be much more coherent than anything I can.
Into ChatGPT.
That too. I read something funny about ChatGPT today, but I won't bring it up.
No, please. Now I'm curious. I'm curious. That's Chekhov's gun, mate.
Okay. So, with the recent Hunter Biden pardon, I forget who, but it was some political commentator was like saying, "Oh, it's not unprecedented for President Biden to pardon his son. Bill Clinton pardoned his half brother. George H.W. Bush pardoned his stepson, and Woodrow Wilson pardoned his brother-in-law Hunter DeButz," which is not a real thing, but like AI like did some research like in the way that AI does. So this reporter asked AI to look up instances of presidential pardons for family members. The AI like compiled some stuff and then made up a human named Hunter DeButz that didn't exist, but like the AI got confused is the long and the short of it, and then the reporter reported it because they just believe the AI.
Welcome to Post-Truth America.
Yeah,
it's funny, and it just reminds me of like one of my favorite memes that Jesse has ever posted. It was like Hunter Biden whenever there's cocaine and prostitutes, and it was like this guy with like 50 cameras strapped to his head. It just something about that makes me laugh so much. Anyway, so we are coming up on just about an hour. This is your part of a JRPG where it says go level up or forever hold your peace, because we're about to enter the final boss. So if anybody would like to say any final piece about Mandy, please do so now.
I did have a question about the ending for you guys.
Yeah.
So one thing I noticed on this rewatch, so obviously he puts on that like body armor from one of the demon bikers he kills. And when he's looking at the church in like the ravine, it looked like it had the symbol of like Lucifer on the back of it. And especially within the final few shots, I mean, he looks like totally fucked, gone. He's covered in blood, just like out of his mind, batshit crazy.
Yeah.
I'm like, and he doesn't seem like he's really on Earth anymore. I was like, did he like transcend or like fall into like that pit of darkness by taking that demonic LSD or whatever and become like a hell rider? That's kind of what I was getting, almost like as like you, because he sees Mandy like that and he's happy, and it's like, did he almost fulfill just like getting revenge for her and like doing right by her at the cost of like himself becoming this hell rider thing? So I don't know.
Raising Arizona. Kind of, no, yeah. Because we did Raising Arizona for the podcast, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It kind of, what you're saying kind of reminds me of the message of that movie, which is that like if Nick Cage would have continued down the path of treachery, that he would have eventually became that demon biker guy from Raising Arizona. I think you might be honest in the getting that. That seems like a very plausible theory to me, that like
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys have a different interpretation, but that's what I got just from this watch alone. Like, I feel like I didn't even catch
Maybe
that.
those demon biker guys like didn't start off so different from Nick Cage in the movie. Yeah, I kind of understand that. That's interesting to me.
No, I
So,
mean, oh, go ahead, Jesse.
so there's a bunch of stuff that happened in the beginning of the movie that like kept popping up, like, or I guess specifically the stuff with Mandy's like book, like the stuff she was reading. I mean, she was like reading a book about the last half of the movie, basically, or that's what it seemed like. At least the stuff she was reading about showed up in the last half of the movie, both in the cartoon like cutscene, but also just like it was like she was reading this like science fiction fantasy stuff, and that's like the world Nick Cage was in like at the end. And it seemed like yeah, and then like the last chapter or whatever is called Mandy, even though she's dead, and like she doesn't have a single line or dialogue or scene or whatever in the last third of it. So it's like he like takes the LSD, and I think he like goes into her universe or something. It's like it's all her stuff. It's all her fantasy, her art that she drew. That's my take.
I was just gonna say, like, just to keep harping on Lovecraftian elements, like, Git, have you ever read any Lovecraft?
A tiny bit. I have a book of his stories, but I haven't read more than a couple.
I would encourage you to read it. Basically, one of the major themes of Lovecraftian horror is that what you or I, as like a normal person, would interpret as insanity is that person understanding the cosmos more than us, and it just sounds crazy to us because we don't have the context. So it would be us going back 500 years and talking about flying in an airplane. The people back then just think you're crazy because they have no concept of what's going on. It just and just like multiply that by 100. So I think that there's parallels there with Nick going off the deep end and kind of seeing the universe for more of what it is. And another element is like that knowledge can give you power in a way that like seems like magic to us. So like him having a demon voice at the end and being able to crush a man's skull with his bare hands.
That's pretty awesome. Anytime an eyeball pops out in a movie, I'm about to give it a high score. That's my policy.
I do want to just bring up my actual favorite scene from the movie, though, is and I think also like the second strongest performance after Ned Denhy is Richard Brake as the LSD chemist.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah,
Dude, that
he was
tiger.
powerful just standing there.
Yeah, but I love the dynamic of like he's having a conversation with Nick Cage. Nick Cage doesn't say anything, but like they're like communicating telepathically, or he can like read Nick Cage's body language. It's like he knows like I think it might be my favorite moment where Nick somehow projects that the tiger should be free, and the chemist is just like he looks like he's about to cry, like, oh my God, you're right, and then he lets the tiger out of the cage. I love that sequence. I
Yeah, and then isn't the tiger like roaring and there's like the moon and everything, like so
Yeah,
awesome.
I'll probably pull that scene up after the podcast and just watch it again on YouTube, just because I love that scene
The
so much.
dude, the tiger against the backdrop of the moon was giving me serious, like, this is going to be on a t-shirt at a Walmart kind of vibes, you know? It was kind of sick in that way. Are we ready to give it scores? I gotta go to bed.
Sorry, I have a quick few things. Did we
Yeah,
want to talk
sure.
about favorite shots? And I want to go back to that line about the darker the horror, the brighter the flame or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like that line specifically. I was like, I feel like you could just come across like, oh, this guy you knew from high school, he had like a breakup because he was like toxic and shitty, and he like posts this as like a status, and you're like, Jesus
And has a
Christ,
picture of
dude.
like the Joker behind
Just like
it.
this is definitely some fucking edgelord guy who would fucking post this online with no shame. And favorite shots for me, right after he builds the axe and he's like driving the car and you see like the road with the headlights and everything. I love that. That's like some of my favorite thing. And the dissolving when Mandy's tripping out talking to the coal leader. But yeah.
I just love all the 2D shit, whether that's like the title treatments or like the title, like the credit titles and the way they're designed, or like the cartoon sequences. I think are just all so awesome. Anybody else?
I like the apparition of Mandy in like the firelit full frontal Mandy, just like in
You
the
know,
face of the
and
camera.
no, I don't think anybody mentioned it, but there's one scene in particular where Jeremiah is like going on his big rant, and it's just, it's framing Jeremiah's face for what seems like five minutes uninterrupted, and it's shifting between his face and Mandy's face. They're like doing something with the exposure there, and kind of like blending the two together. That was pretty cool.
I'll say, as somebody who has done acid, that was just like reminiscent of part of my experience.
Wow.
When did you
So,
do acid, Neil?
in college, a couple times.
Okay.
Yesterday.
Sorry, Mom. My mom occasionally listens to us, so.
Oh no. My mom says she does. I don't think she actually does, though. I think she's full of shit. My mom hijacked that episode. She's like, it was good, honey. Yeah, sorry, Laura.
No, I was saying, I appreciate that they took creative risks with the pacing with this movie. Like, it could have been an incredibly boring movie, but it wasn't. And is, sometimes it would veer between like almost like a music video, but not quite. And I don't know, with the way like with the framing and like the musical stings and everything, sometimes it felt like a 2-hour trailer for like a different movie. That's like, oh, coming up next, you're gonna want to see this movie. It's like, I am. But
Yeah, well, we recently did another movie that the trailers were very different from how the movie actually was, and it was actually like very slow and artsy, and the trailers were not like that at all. Does anybody hold on? I'm gonna pull up the list of the podcast. What the hell was that? Somebody talk while I look for this.
Oh man, I had something else I was gonna say.
Does anybody want to give it a
Another
score?
great, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
No,
go ahead.
go ahead.
Another great Nick Cage smiling shot was at the very end.
Oh yeah.
When he's like
Oh my God.
looking at
Remind
Mandy.
you of the
Oh my
lighthouse.
gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That was so good.
So funny.
Um,
Yeah,
but
that
yeah, and
was.
then he rides away with her in the seat. Man, a lot to think about there.
One hand on your thigh, the other grip in the wheel.
Was it maybe The Adventures of Baron Munchausen that you're thinking of?
No, it was something. I'm thinking of something else. Anyway, whatever. I'm
Dude,
tired.
sorry. Also, that shot when they're like right about to do the home invasion and they're in the dark, and then the red lights up and the guitar is like wailing. I was like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah, the home invasion, top three scene in the movie. Absolutely, for sure. I'll go first. I'm gonna give this movie a 4. It's like not one of my all-time favorites, but I recommend it to a particular audience. Again, it's an exercise in tone, it's an exercise in the visuals, it's an exercise in it just being a big mood bath. Great film in 40s movie watch with your bros. Maybe not a great date night movie. I guess it kind of depends on the relationship you're in. Again, did you watch this with Alyssa?
We've seen it together a couple
You've
times. We
seen it
saw it
together.
together the first time. She likes
Okay.
it like pretty
Okay.
much equal to me.
Okay. Yeah, I like it. I don't know if it's like, it's definitely not my favorite Nick Cage movie, but it's like it's pretty good, and it's like interesting and novel, and like everybody, I think like people should give it a shot if you're like more open-minded about like this kind of thing. So I'll give it a 4. Laura, where are you landing on this one?
You know, it's again, I'm not a horror person too much, so it's not for me, but it's a solid 3. You know, I can recommend it to other people who definitely like horror. And like if I was a horror person, I'd probably give it a 4 or more, but just like it's just not my movie, but it's good enough to watch even though it's out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. How about you, Neil?
I think I have to give it a 5. Like, we mentioned that it's a little light on plot, but I don't mind that in this case. I like it has enough plot for what it's setting out to do. You know, I didn't get bored during it. I don't know what I would cut. I just can't think of anything to take away from it, and then just like the general vibes that it gives off are things that I tend to enjoy. Like I think it's on the lower end of a 5 for me, but
Yeah.
I think that's where I've got to put it.
Damn, dude. I
Wow.
was not expecting that. That was the biggest twist to the movie. It was he'll give this a 5. Gideon, how about you, man?
I mean, even similarly to like what Laura was saying, when I first watched this, I wasn't really that big into horror, and I am a lot more now. And I probably would have given it like a 3 on my first watch, but I've grown to appreciate and love this movie every single time I've gone back to it. And I think I'm with Neil. Like, I think this is a 5 for me. Like, it's just really cool. It's like very visually interesting. All the performances, it's very entertaining. I don't know, it's just crazy. And yeah, not for everybody by any means, but this is like a classic and new favorite Nick Cage movie for me.
Is this your favorite Nick Cage movie?
I don't know about that. I'd have to think about that. But shit, probably top 5, top 3 maybe.
Okay. It's not better than Raising Arizona. That's pretty good.
No, Raising Arizona is something else.
That's a 5 among 5s. Jesse, last but certainly not least, what are you going to give to the movie? Keep in mind, your ranking will be, even though you're not regularly on the podcast, we will tally it in terms of the overall ranking of all the movies that we've done this year.
Okay. Well,
So
I
you could
don't
like
mean to.
really skew it. Like if you give it a 5, I think the math would turn out that it's probably like the top 2 or 3 movie for the year.
Well, I think you're just gonna have to bite that bullet because I loved that movie. I'm so glad that I watched this movie. Like, I don't know. In the last few years, I sit down to watch a movie and I'm just like, I'm just so picky. I just pick apart everything about it. So it's so refreshing to sit down and watch something that I'm just like totally on board with the whole way. I'm just like, you know, I think, yeah, the lack of dialogue is not a problem for me because I think people try to be a little too clever these days with the dialogue anyway.
The
They're
Marvel
trying to,
quips and everything.
they're trying to say way too much and they end up saying something that I don't agree with, and it puts me off because I know that the like director is some dork and has like a Reddit opinion about something. There are
Maybe I
no
just
re
need to have watched this movie like absolutely blasted out of my mind and see what rating I
That'll
give it then.
help.
Yeah, so I mean this movie was just like it was just pure it was art. I feel like it was just art. It was heart and soul, and I did just a tiny little bit of external research after watching the movie because I was obsessed with it after I finished and was curious. And I saw an interview with the director and Nick Cage and the villain, like the three of them, like on a couch together talking about it. And like hearing that the writing of the movie had actually like been in the oven for like 10 years or something, and that
Wow.
you know this was like an indie film, like it won best movie at the Sundance Festival. So I know I'm not crazy. Like this, I think there's like Mandy, It was solid. It was great. 5 out of 5.
Nice.
Best movie I've seen probably all year, I think.
Holy shit.
Wow. Yeah. That, so if I'm looking through the list, and this year has been weird where we haven't had a lot of movies that were like four or three or four of us gave it a 5. So Mandy will probably end up in the top 2 or 3 movies of the year at this point, if the math works out. So I'm excited to see exactly where this goes. The only other one that I think multiple gave it a 5 was Audition.
Furiosa, maybe, or no?
I didn't give Furiosa a 5. Yeah, Neil did. I was at a 4 with that one.
And I think Sam, you gave Bone Tomahawk a 5.
Yeah, right. Bone Tomahawk. I think many of us gave a 5. Bone Tomahawk was the tits. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up, guys. Did we have an idea? We're officially out of Nick Cage November. Mm-hmm. And into do something else December. Did anybody have an idea of what we were going to do for
I would like us to watch at least one shitty Hallmark movie.
Oh,
what about movie with the Terminator and the little boy and the action figure?
Jingle All the Way.
I was planning on watching that anyways, so that'd be perfect actually. I'm good with whatever though. I've never seen Jingle All the Way, so.
Dude, it's. I rented it a lot. I've seen Jingle All the Way many times.
Yeah,
we don't have to do it for the pod, but I encourage everybody to watch I almost said the Scooby Doo Christmas special. I mean the Charlie Brown Christmas special. That's my ugly cry movie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we should also recommend that everybody watch Too Many Cooks.
Oh yes, if you mm-hmm. like Cheddar Goblin, there's more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's more where that came from. Well, Jesse, thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Gideon, for putting up with a late night.
No worries. Yeah,
Neil, I hope your week has improved now that you've watched Mandy and hung out with your bros. Laura, I don't have one for you. I'm sorry. I don't. I hope you enjoyed the movie.
The kitchen adventures.
You know what? Continue. I'm just happy to be here.
I hope fun. Your pickled, what was it? Pickled cabbage?
Yeah.
Turns out. What was the verdict on that? It turned out good?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Brilliant. Awesome.
Great show.
Thanks, guys. Peace out, everybody.
Have a good night, guys.